and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Russians and the Americans have made it clear they want to normalize the relations after the disastrous Biden years. At this point, both appear committed to ending the conflict in Ukraine. The Europeans and the Ukrainians are not at the table. Neither earned a seat. Crosstalking the prospects for peace, I'm joined by my guest, Scott Ritter in Dalmar. He is a former intelligence officer and United Nations weapons inspector. In Bethesda, we have Peter Kuznick. He is a professor of history at American University, as well as co-author with Oliver Stone, The Untold History of the United States. And in Berlin, we cross to Ulrike Giro. She is a professor of political science, as well as co-director of the European Democracy Lab. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. You know, Scott, you know, I don't really want to delve into the chatter on Twitter. It is so nauseating. It is so beyond the point. It's all this genuflecting to values instead of politics and geopolitics. I have a very straightforward question for you. You're a man of history. What would be wrong with having Yalta 2.0 that would stop the fighting? Because that's the most important thing, is to have the conflict stop. Go ahead, Scott.
You know, it was interesting. I was in Crimea this time last year, actually, January of last year, and I met with the governor of Crimea and a Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs official, and I said, why don't we have a Yalta 2.0? In fact, that's what should happen. That's what needs to happen, a gathering of officials, United, American, Russian, European, Ukrainian, to talk about reconciliation and moving forward. And they embraced the idea. I brought it back here to the United States, and I hit a brick wall. There was no interest in reconciliation whatsoever. My understanding is that there is going to be something of a Yalta 2.0 in March to go through this exercise. Who will be? It's not a question of who will be invited. I think the Russians will invite as many people as possible. The question is who will be willing to attend, who has the courage to attend. And that's always been the question. Oftentimes when we speak of matters of war and peace, people equate courage to fighting. It doesn't take a brave man to fight. As we've seen in Ukraine, we can grab somebody off the street, bonk them on the head, put a uniform on them, and throw them in a battlefield. That doesn't make that man a hero. The true heroes are those who will stand up in the cause of peace to those who are promoting war, those who will stand up in the face of adversity, being condemned, etc. The peacemakers are the true heroes. And right now, for the first time, we have an opportunity for heroism to shine around the world to bring an end to this conflict. And Yalta 2.0 would be the perfect venue to do it.
I can't think of a better way. Peter, essentially the same question to you, because, you know, there's this big uproar about who has a place at the table. Why should Europe be at the table? Why should Ukraine be at the table? They don't want an end to this conflict. They want to continue it. It's supposed to, the venue in Riyadh was to U.S. and Russia to reestablish good relations or working relations and to stop the conflict. Ukraine and the Europeans are not on the same page. Peter.
Let me start off by agreeing with Scott that the peacemakers are the true heroes. And I've also been giving a lot of talks and interviews about Yalta. And it's a good model. But what I see as the concerns, when I was talking last night with my students about the Versailles Treaty after World War I, and also if we look at what happened after World War II. World War I, the Versailles Treaty fell apart pretty quickly and ended up indirectly leading to the rise of Hitler in Germany and World War II. And then World War II, since they didn't have a endurable peace, it led to the Cold War. Now, those weren't inevitable in either case, but I think there was a lack of wisdom, especially once Truman came to power. After Roosevelt died, we were on a course toward World War II, World War III, and the Cold War. For me, the question is, what kind of peace are we going to be able to negotiate? A ceasefire would be a start, and we need a ceasefire, but we need an enduring peace that reflects the interests of all the crucial parties involved. Now, the United States has not in any way respected Russia's security interests for quite some time now. We can go back to even before the Cold War, and the United States has had treated Russia as an enemy, except for a few brief moments when we worked together. So I think what we need now in terms of the settlement of this war, I understand why Europe is not included in the early stages, but at some point Europe is going to have to be brought in. Europe has been a detriment to the peace so far. And so I think we're going to need a broader kind of understanding that's going to bring in all the interested parties. We need a stable security framework.
Exactly.
That respects Russia's interests, China's interests, also U.S., European, and Ukrainian interests. And I think we can do that, but it's going to take a lot of statesmanship to pull that off.
Yeah, I've said on this program for ever since the conflict started, you have to go big security arrangements for everyone, the indivisibility of security. That has not even been mentioned yet, but that has to be considered. Ulrika, in Berlin, is Europe sovereign? Is Ukraine sovereign? Because that's what I said in my introduction, that neither earned a seat at the table because neither one of them are sovereign. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Well, yes, obviously sovereignty is a big issue for Europe, and then it depends on what you define is Europe. I mean, is this the EU or is Europe France, Germany, and other states? And even there's a sovereignty question about Germany popping up. So, yes, I mean, the weakest element in the whole sort of chain is definitely the European Union and all the reactions to this peace settlement that Mr. Trump and Putin are envisaging. So, there is, I mean, for me, it's a tragedy what is happening. I mean, not that the peace is settled. I'm totally in favor of this, and I'm very happy that the peacemakers, Putin and Trump, are agreeing on having these negotiations. But there is a point, and I think Scott mentioned it, that Europe must be or should be somehow engaged, because what we really should strive for is something like a European, Ukrainian, Russian, say, peace architecture. And we had elements of that. We had it in the Minsk 1 and 2 agreements. Yep. Basically striving for a neutral and federal Ukraine. We had it also in the Charter of Paris from 1990. And I think, these are the concepts we have on the continent, and it's old.
Yeah, but if I could interrupt here, I mean, the security arrangement that has failed was against Russia and without Russia. And that is the equation that must change.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, the whole architecture that we have envisaged in the 70s with Egon Bahr and Willy Brandt and Olaf Palme and Kreisky, that was then settled in OECD 92 Charter of Paris, basically, all this has failed. Unfortunately, it has failed, but it has also failed because of American intervention that we have seen over the past 10, 15 years at least. So for me, the biggest, most important point is whether Europe, you talked sovereignty, whether Europe could have, and if so, how, a sort of sovereign European stance that makes Europe capable to build that peace order with Russia now instead.
Yeah, but there's one. Let me go to Scott here. But there's one word that hasn't been mentioned here, Scott. It's NATO. Okay, and can Europe be sovereign in NATO? At least to this point, it can't, and it doesn't say, and it doesn't seem to want it. Let me throw that to Scott.
Look, NATO is a Cold War artifact. It was created in different times under different conditions for different purposes. And since the collapse of the Soviet Union, NATO has literally been adrift in search of a mission. And also, let me put it this way, NATO only works if the United States and Europe are on the same page in terms of goals and objectives, even if those goals and objectives are flawed, which I believe they have been for the last decade in terms of trying to recreate an adversary in Russia that justifies the continued expansion and existence of NATO. I disagree with that mission statement, but it worked for America and NATO as long as they both agreed that was the mission. I'm just going to make this point right now. anybody who is seeking to build architectures of peace and stability in Europe today, predicated on past relationships between the United States and Europe, it's an exercise in futility. There is a revolution taking place in America today. And if you don't understand this, then you will not be able to comprehend what the future looks like. America will never be the United States that Europe has grown accustomed to. Those days are over. There is a revolution that is redefining how America looks at itself and how America will interact in the world. There are many people out there who believe that this revolution could peter out in 4 years, and that America will return to what it was in the past. I think the level of disruption of the deep state, of the establishment, is so severe and so absolute that no matter what happens in the next election cycle, America will never be the same. And if Europe is hoping that America returns to what we were in the past, they've made a fatal error. You know, normally when we talk about American presidencies and foreign policy, the foreign policy changes usually reach culmination at the end of the second term. Here we have Trump a month into his presidency, transforming not only how America views itself, but how America views the world. And he will have 4 years to implement this.
Well, I mean, no doubt, as we go to the break here, no doubt Trump is in a hurry, okay? Unfortunately, we're going to need patience to get peace. I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the prospects for peace. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the prospects for peace. Okay, let's go back to Peter in Bethesda. Is the transatlantic relationship in breach right now? Will it ever return? I'm kind of going dovetailing off of what Scott said in the first part of the program. It seems that the post-World War II era has finally come to an end. There's a breach when it comes to security and a cultural one as well. Peter.
Yes, clearly there's a breach, a fundamental breach, a deep breach. And in many ways, that's welcome. Europe has been playing a subordinate role. Europe has been going along with U.S. initiatives throughout the Cold War and now in the post-Cold War. So this is a welcome moment. I'm not quite as optimistic as Scott is about either the enduring impact or the positive attributes of this. I have a much more negative view of Trump than Scott does. And the new order could be much more along the lines of what Musk, with his fascist salutes and embrace of the AFD, or what Vance and Hegseth have been saying. Now, I do support Trump's initiatives when it comes to cutting nuclear weapons. I do support Trump's initiative when it comes to reconciling the relationship with Russia. I mean, I'm very, very glad to see this and support him strongly on this. And I think it is changing the global architecture, a fundamental change of a sort that we haven't seen. You know, when I look at what the U.S. policy has been toward Russia, especially in the last few decades, I go back to Brzezinski's 1997 Grand Chessboard, where he talks about the strategy for weakening Russia and making sure it's never a superpower again, by wresting Ukraine away from Russia, saying Russia will never be a Eurasian power. But the world has changed. We're in a multipolar world now. And I think that we have to recognize that and begin to sit down and establish new security guidelines that represent the interests of all the crucial parties here. So I do want to see that summit that Scott was talking about, whether it's Yalta or a broader summit. We have to include Modi. We have to include Lula. We have to include several others, the South Africans, because we need an enduring world answer to this crisis that we're facing, which is a global crisis at this point.
You know, I know the difference. Trump is a very divisive figure. That's speaking the obvious here. I hope that he has the vision to do exactly what Peter said. I tend to doubt it, but that's what we can look forward to, possibly. Ulrika, in Berlin, when are the Europeans going to stop talking about values and instead start talking about politics and geopolitics? I mean, it's so exhausting listening to these people. They never say anything. Macron, we have to have a meeting in Paris. Well, they decided to have another meeting after that meeting to plan another meeting. I mean, it's hard to take Europe seriously, really. They can't even seriously consider their own interests.
Well, you are asking the wrong person, because I'm also hoping that they stop very soon talking moral and moral then instead of interest. Yeah, but going back to the NATO issue and the transatlantic relations being smashed, I mean, this is precisely the point. I totally agree with Scott and with Pete that we have a sort of really a breathtaking moment here to manage. And obviously, as a European, we talked sovereignty. There is a question about where will Europe be, if anywhere, in all this sort of setting. Yeah. And then you talk NATO. And I mean, there is this wording of Lord Ismay, keep the Russians out, the Americans in, and Germany down. Yeah, that was the role of NATO. If we take that word today, the Americans are going out and should be out. The Russians should be in, I mean, in Europe, and not Germany up, but Europe up. Yeah, I think that is the vision we should have. And indeed, there's a multipolar world to shape. And for me, the interesting question is that, I mean, the interesting question, unfortunately, I think that Europe is taking the wrong decisions. Macron, Scholz, Merz, whoever will be the German chancellor by next Sunday, which is that instead of seizing the opportunity that the Americans are moving out and giving us the chance to build again a peace order with Ukraine and Russia, that we, the Europeans, are going to enhance the polarization. The whole talk after the Munich Security Conference was about this, I mean, drama and tragedy. Well, the Papa, Uncle Sam, is
but
sort of
Ulrika, I mean, you had the chairman of the Munich Security Conference. He was crying.
Yeah,
he
yeah,
was crying that, like a child. I mean, I can't disagree with anything you're saying, but I don't know where this is going to come from. Okay,
well,
you know what was
I
it?
Mean,
I'm sorry. What was it? It's a wake up call. No, it's a circuit breaker. That's what's going on. Go ahead.
The problem is that there's still much of the European establishment, and believe me, I was just on BBC4 talking with somebody of the UK who thinks that the only answer that Europe should give now is enhancing weapons delivery, enhancing NATO or European defense, doing this patrol, the troops, border security, you know, the corridor, everything they talk about now. I think, I mean, for me, and I guess I agree with Pete and Scott about this here, I think that's the last thing Europe should do. So there is, I agree with you, a huge sort of work to do to change or to turn around the European thinking on this, because we, I think, should not be whatever drama to death that the Americans are leaving us, but seize the opportunity that this is a chance for Europe precisely to go sovereign and precisely to get emancipated. So what I can tell you is there are people. I mean, I myself, I'm trying to build a sort of critical European sort of community with Spaniards and with Dutch people and Italian and French people. So there are those people, but we have been all oppressed in a way because media weren't free, you know this. So it was hard to sort of to bring these arguments into public TVs. But I think there's an opening now. And the more we can do about sort of spreading different answers to what should happen now. For instance, there is now a German move on neutrality. There is now a couple of, you know, German intellectuals who signed a declaration on German neutrality. So all this goes back to sort of what is the peace order?
Well, but a good thing it would be if we're talking Yalta 2.0 is to dissolve NATO. Then you can talk about being neutral, okay? And things become a lot simpler. Scott, you know, I'm going to have to pour cold water on all of this. You know, I'm glad the U.S. and Russia are reestablishing diplomatic relations, but the next step is going to be really, really hard. And I'm just going to give you a few words. Minsk, Istanbul. Okay, why are the Russians going to trust this administration?
I'll give you one word. Trump. Okay? If you don't understand that this man is unlike anything that's ever happened.
I agree. I mean, even Peter will agree on that one. We'll all agree on that.
For better or for worse.
Yep.
And again, Peter, I'm not MAGA, just so you understand.
I'm not either.
No, I meant, the gentleman in Bethesda, I'm not a Trump cheerleader. I'm not here advocating. I'm stating the fact. The fact is there's a revolution taking place, for better or for worse. And my advice to the Russians who are watching this show is do not hold the standard of past performance of America up to this administration. This administration is giving you a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to change the way you work with America. Take this opportunity and run with it. Trump is destroying the establishment that hampered any positive movement towards U.S.-Russian relations. That establishment is being annihilated as we speak. The Department of Justice that sent FBI agents into my house because I dared write articles for RT has been eviscerated, has been eliminated. Those prosecutors are gone, and those FBI agents are fired. That is gone. The Pentagon has been ordered to reduce its budget without any precondition in terms of peace with Russia. This administration is going in a completely different direction. You know who headed the negotiations in Riyadh? You might think it was Marco Rubio. You might think he was backed up by Marco Waltz, but it was Witkoff. And you know who is the most important man on the Russian side? It was Kirill Dmitriev. Why? Because this was about the economy. And here's my other word of advice to Europe. Don't ever talk about the military again, because you cannot play that game. You can't afford it. You don't have the capacity. It will ruin you. If Europe wants a seat at the table, find your equivalent of Kirill Dmitriev, send him to Moscow, and begin discussions right now about Europe can reconnect with Russia economically, because it's going to be the economy that's going to lead the way towards bettering relations. Trump has figured that out. Russia, I think, understands that. Europe needs to get on board. And unfortunately, Ukraine is trapped because it has become a problem that is solely defined by the military. And it will unfortunately pay the brunt of the mistakes of everybody.
Yeah, but Scott, let's be clear here. Let's be clear here. You know, Ukraine volunteered for this. OK. And, you know, you play stupid games, you get stupid prizes. OK, the human loss is catastrophic. It never should have happened. But I'm not going to let the Ukrainian elite off the hook. Peter, we're almost running out of time here. Going back to the issue of trust. How do we get there? How do we start that process of building trust again? Because I can tell you from where I sit, there's still zero trust. Go ahead.
Well, there's a long history of why there's so little trust. Scott's confident that they're going to dismantle the deep state in a way that it's not going to come back to life again. I hope he's right in most respects. We build trust by following through on our agreements. Initially, we're going to have to lift the sanctions on Russia. We're going to have to, Scott is emphasizing the economic ties, and that's a good place to begin. We're going to have to take additional steps to the ones we've already taken in terms of forcing an end to this fighting. And I'd love to see Trump follow through on cutting the Pentagon. The Chinese response to Trump's discussion of cutting nuclear weapons was, Americans, you talk about America first. Why don't you be the first to cut the nuclear weapons?
Good point.
Trump can do this. Yeah. You know, there are steps that the United States can take unilaterally to show its good faith. And when it comes to the military, when it comes to our bases overseas, I'm just back from Okinawa. When it comes to our military spending, when it comes to our nuclear programs, I mean, we can take unilateral steps at the same time as we're negotiating.
Okay, on that point, we've run out of time. I have a suggestion for Donald Trump. My three guests here, they should be on speed dial. You three should be on speed dial for Trump to get real information. We've run out of time. That's it. I want to thank my guests in Bethesda, Berlin, and in Del Mar. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.